Do you want to find solutions that help teams make better decisions, solve problems faster, and free their creative minds to come up with smarter solutions? There's a workshop for that. Bonjour, I'm Nati Ravez, and I'm delighted to welcome to this show facilitators and experts who share their knowledge and experience of everything you need to know in the world of facilitation, giving you tips and tools for leading groups, sparking collaboration, and driving innovation. Thank you for tuning in, and let's go.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the podcast in which you'll find out about a platform full of resources and tools that will make your workshops preparations easier, as well as some great revelations about the real state of facilitation in 2024. For this, I welcome a lovely young lady, Deborah Rimmoiseau, who is not only an EAF endorsed facilitator, but is also one of the editors of the prestigious State of Facilitation 2024 report alongside the talented team of Session Lab. Hi, Deborah.
Hello, Nathi. Thanks for that very embarrassing introduction. It's wonderful to be on your show. Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for listening.
So you are tuning in from?
I'm in central Italy, in Perugia, in the countryside. And I stay in the countryside because it's a message to facilitators out there. For many young people, it's a dream to live in the countryside and work a cool job. I do it. It's possible with a lot of traveling and very good broadband.
Yeah, like I'm living one time in Germany, one time in Bali. So this is possible, actually.
Yes, these like lifestyles that are very aspirational are possible. You do the one in which you travel a lot. I do the one in which I'm rooted on the land a lot. But this kind of work makes it possible for me to tend a hectare of land and facilitate. I was going to say at the same time, but it's not literally at the same time.
Today we will talk about a lot of things. And we will talk, of course, about the report which just came out, which gives us an overview of who the facilitators in the world are, their age, their experience, their clients, but also their background. So for this reason, tell me, please, what is yours?
Okay, we start with the easy questions. Mm-hmm. Asking a facilitator what their background is. Oh, my God. So I have been facilitating since 2009, which makes me, I've heard the word dinosaur used.
An old facilitator.
It makes me an old and seasoned facilitator. I have a background in communication studies. I dabbled in journalism and event management. Useful event management for facilitators. Yeah. Very useful. And so I started facilitating in 2009 in kind of community organizing. So I soon discovered infinite meetings that never end and that you don't know what happened and you have no decisions. And I was like, this is terrible.
What was it called, facilitator, at that time?
Is it ever called facilitator at any time?
Question. So
I think it was called, I was doing it in Italy. So in Italy for a while, a fashionable word, which is absolutely out of fashion now, was animatore.
Animatore. In German, it's moderatore.
In Italian, moderatore is more like English moderator. So the person trying to keep order in a meeting. Okay. And what I was doing was more like going into communities and helping local groups organize projects. And they called that animazione, which is very like a tourist village. I don't like the word, but that's what it was called. And then I discovered facilitation and all those methods at mm-hmm. that point. And I was like, this is fantastic. I'm a person who really dislikes waste. And I find that wasted time and meetings, wasted energy of people was really, really frustrating. So that's one of my drivers for being super passionate about facilitation is I love people to be efficient in the projects they do and then have a lot of time for other things and other dreams and or more projects. I don't know. But that wastefulness of human energy really, really bugged me. And facilitation really helps avoid it. So I've been facilitating a long time. What I'm doing now is both training facilitators and training in group dynamics. I have the privilege of working with some universities and higher education places where I get to expose young people to facilitation training. It's great.
This is good because I know we talked about it or we message about it, about the fact that facilitation right now is not really part of the education of, you know, young people. And I really think that this is a skill that should be part of it. Like,
agreed. And my dream used to be for there to be a facilitation faculty in university. But then I realized now it's more like I would like just facilitation to be taught in every faculty.
Yeah.
And also at other levels of school, of course, because it's so useful to people who are working as a team of medical professionals. Or I was recently honored to be invited to talk to young wannabe lawyers because they were talking about environmental conflict prevention. And I talked about facilitation in that context. So it's useful even in places where at first when I got a call from a law professor, I was like, what? But facilitation pops up in many, many, many places. So I'm doing that. I'm teaching training. And at the same time, I am writing about facilitation, which is another great passion of mine to, you know, spread the word more.
Yeah, you are writing as a content writer at Session Lab.
That I am, since a couple of years.
I have to say that discovering that platform when I was starting out as a facilitator was really like a wow, because it's like being in Alice in Wonderland. I discovered so many resources that helped me structure and design my workshops, so many ideas for activities, agendas, etc. But you are in the best position to talk about it than me. So what can a facilitator find on the platform? And is it only a platform?
Okay. First of all, can we quote you on that? Like, can I tell the rest of the marketing team to put a little quote? This is Nathy says,
you can.
Discovering Session Lab is like being Alice in Wonderland. We love that. She said we can. Okay.
Guys, you can.
From Session Lab team, you heard her. She said we can. That's great. Okay. So I can in fact speak as part of a team, but it's also good to speak as a human being who's also a facilitator. I discovered Session Lab super late. I discovered it basically when they put an announcement out that they were looking for somebody who could write and facilitate. And I was like, nobody's ever going to pay anybody for writing about facilitation. I was wrong. That's what I get paid to
do
now.
You got the job. I was too late.
We might have other, you know, keep growing the platform and the tool, and maybe we will need more people in our
team. That would be nice.
This is not a promise. So what Session Lab is, for those of you who don't know, don't worry. I also discovered it very late. We're not all like Nathy, who discovered it at the beginning of her facilitation journey. So it's there to help facilitators, but also workshop designers, team leaders, event managers, you know, anybody who has to organize a session or a workshop, to prepare, also to deliver like great workshops. And how we do that is we can simplify and say it's two parts. So there's one really easy to use software tool that's designed to help you prepare your sessions. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make an example to make this understandable, which is, you know, when you are designing a program and you might want an exercise, like, I don't know, a paired dialogue lasting 15 minutes, and you want to do it at this point, and you put it in your program, and then you change your mind. Or your client changes their mind. Mm-hmm. Or you have to add 10 minutes of introduction by the local mayor. And if you have to do that with when I had to do that with the programs I used to create, I used to use Excel.
Yeah.
True. It then took a long time for me to reorganize the whole thing and change all the timings. But Session Lab does it automatically. You just drag and drop your little activity. So that in itself to me was when I got it was like a wow factor. And then you can do other things on the software that are super useful. I'm going to point out two that I discovered are very useful. One is it gives you really nice printouts for clients, for collaborators, for your tech host if you're working remotely. And for me, in the previous life, before Session Lab life, I used to have these complicated Excel sheets and I'd have to run them through clients step by step to explain my system. And now it's visually appealing just to send them a printout for Session Lab and they can understand it on their own. I'll still run it through them, but it's much easier and more professional. And then it has collaboration features. So your clients or collaborators or co-facilitators can add comments. You can assign a task to somebody and all that kind of thing. So I'm going to do like the ad. Please try it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And another thing, it saves all your sessions so that if next year my same client asks me to do the same session and I have completely forgotten what I did,
it's
based
it.
On a true story,
yeah.
I can just go into my Session Lab account and fish it out and maybe make some changes, but it'll have all my notes and show me what I did last year that they liked so much so that I can change it and I can bit, but I can probably do it again. Besides this tool, then there's a lot of content. So there's a basically a library of resources for facilitators,
yeah.
which you
so
like.
It's so valuable. It's so good made. Yeah.
Yeah. And some of those are individual like methods or tools. Many, it's not just us writing them. They're crowdsourced from hundreds of facilitators around the world. And then there's a library of templates. So ready-made sessions that you can be inspired by, which is the fancy way of saying copy or be inspired by. And then blog articles and posts and, you know, as many and of course, the State of Facilitation report.
Yeah. And there is also a community there.
Yes, thank you. Wow, you're great. You remember. Yes,
please,
there
please.
Is also a very friendly free community with events more or less once a month, sometimes more, sometimes less, where people come and discuss facilitation, give tips, take like specialized workshops with experts, and also chat. Of course, it's a community that there's events and then there's a community you can chat on. Plenty of people use it to ask for quick advice. You know, I'm running this workshop. What would you guys and girls do? And facilitators, I'm going to probably say this again today. Facilitators are so friendly and collaborative and kind.
Yeah.
That when you ask them that question.
Yeah. It's like, does it exist? I mean, since 2 years, I'm very active in several communities, but facilitators club, whatever. And the people are so friendly. I mean, I really hope it will stay like this. It's really so friendly, helpful. And I don't feel this competitor's mindset. I don't feel it, really, really not. Even with the people who are doing exactly the same with the same target clients, absolutely not.
Agreed, except to the exactly the same with the same target clients. I think nobody's doing exactly the same. And I think that's why it's so, like, I do not know people. I know people who are competitive, like me, in the sense of, oh, I'm such a good facilitator, did this better than last time, but not competing with one another.
Yeah.
It's a super collaborative space. And I think it is because there's space. It's a growing profession. There's work to go around.
Yeah.
Of course, not for everybody every day, but there's work to go around. And because it's so personal, there's so much of a human and personal element that you can only follow a certain number of clients. And I often get requests and send them to somebody else because I might, for example, if somebody's asking me to facilitate for a company, I don't have much experience with that. So I send them to my colleagues and friends who do that. And there's a lot of that going around.
Yeah. I love also to be a connector. There are some facilitators who are specialized in AI design sprint, which I did also. So I know how to facilitate it, but this is not my main topic. So if I have facilitators who want to learn it, I send them to another person. Or if I have someone who would like to know more about Lego Serious Play, I use it in my sessions, but I have not learned really deep in the method. So I love to be connected to all these people and everybody can give something of their knowledge. So I make it a big community.
Yeah. And I can connect that to, I'm going to get back to this, but findings from the State of Facilitation report last year, we discovered or got data to confirm that most facilitators work alone most of the time. It's not as common as we would like to co-facilitate, and not everybody is part of a team or an agency. Most people are kind of freelancers working alone, or they're like the only workshopper in their team or company if they're working in-house. So we call that finding the lonely facilitator, ? Which led to a lot of conversations and reactions, which were like, I work alone, But I'm not lonely because the informal networks and the communities and also the formal ones, the associations and the groups of people who took a course together are the strong support system that comes from facilitators. So we work alone a lot. This is a big generalization, but we do a big survey, so we've got big generalizations. We work alone a lot, but then we're together in community to learn and support one another. So that's pretty cool.
If we've picked your curiosity about Session Lab, about the platform, the resources, the tools, and the community, you can pick in the show notes a little link. You can click on it and you will get an extended trial so that you can play with it and you can comment how you found Session Lab. Just try it. This is my advice of the day. And now we come to the crunchy theme. We will talk about the second edition of the State of Facilitation because it has just been released. And I'm really, really curious to know what the big revelations and evolutions since last year. But first, I would like to just go back to last year because last year in 2023, it was the very first edition. So can you tell me why did you launch this edition? How you came to this idea? And what were last year your big aha after getting all this input?
Okay, let's take those one at a time. So why did we decide to do a survey and then a report on the State of Facilitation? So this year's is, as you said, it's the second edition. The first edition is called State of Facilitation 2023. And it's based on results of a survey we ran at the end of 2022 as Session Labs. So what happened there is really very similar to the story of what happened with Session Lab in general as a tool and as a platform and as resources, which is noticing that something was missing that we personally would have liked to have and going like, okay, if it's true that nobody's done that, we're going to just go ahead and do it ourselves. So that is a bit of the story of how Session Lab as a tool was created. I had no idea that existed at the time. That was, I think, 2012. And Robert and Philip, who are the founders of Session Lab, were working as facilitators and trainers with youth. And they wanted a tool that would look better than Word or Excel or whatever they were using to design their sessions. And they were very surprised that it wasn't there yet. So they went ahead, brilliant people, and started working on what became Session Lab. And in a very similar way, many of us at Session Lab, I think also the marketing team in general, were often looking for data, like how many people are facilitating, what age are they, you know, target data, which countries in the world are they, but also looking for topics for articles. So what are they interested in? What are their challenges? What has been changing? What are the trends? And we were like, okay, so many other professions have their yearly report. Like, I don't know, UX designers out there, you have your yearly report. And we were like, why doesn't facilitation have a yearly report? So we decided to try ourselves. It's not the first time this has been tried. Like IAF, so the International Association of Facilitators, which I'm also part of, did, I believe, once or maybe twice a survey, but much smaller. And also about the topic, the hot topic of pricing, which is a very exciting and difficult topic to cover in a survey.
Yeah.
Two heroes, Kirsty Lewis, and before her, Miriam Hannes, did some pretty interesting pricing surveys, which I would recommend going looking for them. But again, smaller, not so comprehensive, very, very interesting if you were looking at pricing, but we were looking more for like the whole thing. So that's the State of Facilitation. And by the way, this was not my idea. The idea was Philip Kishes, who's our chief technical officer and who works on the data and understands the numbers, which I'm not very good with numbers, which is a weird claim for somebody who's working on a survey, but I am not. I'm better with stories and with qualitative data than with numbers. So we've been, so it was his idea, and then we've been working on it together with the rest of the Session Lab team, of course. So that was your very long answer to your first question.
Oh, sorry. I put too much question in the room.
No, I even knew what you were going to ask, but now I forgot. Where should I go next? What would you like to know more about?
My second question was, for the first edition, as you got the numbers and as you get the analysis of the of these numbers, what was your personal big surprise?
Okay, very honestly, my personal big surprise was that more than 1,000 people took the time to respond.
It's nice, no?
It is amazing. This is a very, very honest answer because I could, you know, draw out from the data. Again, facilitators are generous and nice people.
Yeah.
This is a long survey. Okay. Yeah. It takes, truth be told, it takes 15, 20, maybe 20 even half
minutes,
an hour.
Yeah.
20 minutes is the average to fill it out.
Yeah.
And not only did about 1,000 people, it was over 1,000 people last year and about 1,000 people this year. There's maybe a little bit of survey fatigue. Took the time to answer, gave us feedback, wrote lengthy answers in the qualitative answers. And many people keep saying to us how they appreciate the survey themselves. And I'm going to spend a moment on that because that blew my mind. So people appreciate spending time filling out a survey and giving us their anonymous data. And they told us there was mainly two reasons for that. One is that facilitators like to reflect. So we ask questions such as, you know, what were your big challenges last year? What were your changes in your profession? Which was the most interesting podcast you listened to? Hint, hint. And facilitators like to reflect back. So that was one thing. And the other one, which I really think is super interesting, is that in the survey, you find questions around, for example, tools. What digital tools have you used in the past year? And a really, really a big number of people fed back to us that just reading the list was interesting.
Yeah, because they got ideas. So much. I think I gave you also my opinion. It was like, wow, this is so cool because I never heard about this or about this. And just by feeling and clicking, I was taking notes on all the tools that were on the page and looking at this.
And here's an insider information that I don't think is necessarily, we write it in small print at the bottom. So those lists are, the first year they were compiled from our best ideas, but now they are based on last year's answers. So if over 1% of people added a certain tool, it makes the cut to the next survey. Mm-hmm. So you see it builds on people's knowledge. Like this year, visual tools appeared in the list of what digital tools have you been using, like Canva and Padlet that I hadn't thought of, but people wrote them as other, this, that. And so we added them. So that's makes the survey itself interesting, apparently. So that was amazing.
If you don't want to miss the release of future episodes, press the subscribe button on your podcast app. And don't hesitate to send us your questions or comments, which I'll be sure to answer at podcast@laworkshoppers.com. I also invite you to sign up for our newsletter called La Workshoppers Gazette to receive valuable resources on facilitation, upcoming events, podcast guests, and services offered by La Workshoppers team. What are the big revelations of this year?
If
you had like two or three categories of things that you are thinking of.
Sure. So of this year, take a guess. The big change this year has been, like in every other intellectual and digital field, AI. Good. So of course, one tool that didn't even appear in last year's survey and report. It's this year, yeah.
It's like it was 2023 was the AI year.
Yes. And of course, the report and the findings and the people's answers reflect that. So we've got a whole new section about facilitators and AI with its data and commentary. And I can tell you a bit about what came out of that.
Please.
Sure.
What facilitators are using AI for?
Aha. Yes. See, great reasons to read the report. So, do take note now and while you're reading it that we asked these questions at the end of 2023. We'd already get different answers now, and that's what's great about doing it again at the end of this year. We're going to be able to see some trends. So at the end of 2023, about one third of facilitators had not used AI at all. Oh. So that means about two thirds had. Well, not yeah. used AI at all in the context of work, because we asked for your professional work. So that means two thirds had. And of those two thirds, I think 36% had been using OpenAI's ChatGPT, of mm-hmm. course. And what have they been using it for? So what have they been using it for is, I found that really interesting, actually. Mainly tasks that are around facilitation, but are not the core of facilitation, such as, for example, writing invitations to your workshop, mm-hmm. making very nice visuals for your PowerPoints. Mm-hmm. I thought this one was clever. Writing case studies that you're going to use in your workshop. Yeah. So all these things that are part of organizing a workshop session event, but are not really, you know, the core work of reading the room and deciding on what tools and designs and being there with the participants and all those very, very human things that facilitators do.
Yeah. It's more the preparation and design part, right?
Yeah. It's mostly copy. And then lots of people, of course, said that they were using ChatGPT in particular as a sparring partner for ideas,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah,
that,
brainstorming.
That, of course, very common. Mm. There's also some, like, uses that I decided to highlight in our commentary of the report, even though they were very few people, but they were super interesting, having to do with using AI to improve inclusion by using it, yeah, for example, as a translator.
Yeah.
There are some very good tools for that. Automatic captioning, automatic summaries, and even somebody, thank you person, all the data is anonymous. You know who you are. We don't. Who said, I give my program and my notes to ChatGPT and then I ask it, what can I do to make this more inclusive and get tips?
This is good. I was not thinking about this.
There's plenty of responses that people give that I would never have thought of.
Right. But AI is also more and more integrated in some tools. I'm just thinking about Storms, for example, which is yeah. another platform that I really like. And they have include AI function so that you can use it during your sessions. I use yes. it during my sessions. It was in Italy, by the way. It was in Bologna mm-hmm. in October. It gave me some cards that started the brainstorming I was asking the participants to do so that they had a direction. It was really, really good.
So, yeah. So we have, with the report, on the report, you see data, you see some like comments on the data from Session Lab, which is mostly me and some colleagues. And then there's these, oh, you know this because you're one of them. There's these expert commentators.
Yeah.
Fun.
Yeah,
and we
like
have
it.
Alex from Storms, whose yeah. surname I shall not even try to pronounce, commenting on the AI. Now, I practically, like a negligible percentage of people responding to the survey said that they used AI regularly or in session. Because I think we were certainly at the end of 2023, I would say we're still in an experimental phase. And I interpreted that data as people are not daring to work so much in session regularly with AI, but that's already changing for sure.
It will change. Yeah.
For sure. We'll see that data changing. Yeah. And a few people did. Most of the people said they're using it occasionally, experimentally, trying it out, but this was very early.
Okay. So AI was the big revelation for the
exciting
past
and
year,
shiny.
Actually. Yeah. And we will see where it goes this year. Do you have other highlights, session, location? Is it in person, hybrid, remote?
Yeah.
What are the insights?
Yeah, that was also, I was like very excited to ask that same question for the second year in a row, which is where have most of your sessions taken place, remotely, on in person or hybrid. So there's a lot to dig into that specific data. Because the basic gist of the thing is In-person is back. 23, there was that, and there was the mystery of hybrid. Was hybrid going to be a thing? Was hybrid going to stay? And by hybrid, I mean workshops where some people are sharing a space and some people are joining remotely, and that at the same time.
It's hard to facilitate.
They are super hard to facilitate. Yeah. And that surprised me that this year, state of facilitation data says 70% of facilitators have run at least one hybrid workshop in 2022. In 2023.
I was one of them.
Yeah.
And it was, it was 40 people and 2 persons remotely. It's not so easy.
It's hard, and it's, at least by the data, it's staying. So various people reported in the qualitative part, so when they were writing down what changes, that their companies, this was mostly in-house facilitators, had invested in good technology for hybrids. And so there's my recommendation to companies out there. If you are working and if you're planning to keep this hybrid thing going and, you know, have your colleagues join from different offices and have somebody facilitate their workshops, it is really important to invest in good tech for audio, if you have that. And also if your facilitator says that they need a co-facilitator or a tech host or more than one, listen to them, because hybrid is tough. And I personally, Deb, I thought it was a thing that happened because of the pandemic and it was going away. Data says it's not going away.
It's not, because through the pandemic, companies understood that they can have the talent anywhere in the world. But they still want to have some headquarters. So you will more and more have it.
Yeah.
And the fact is, my advice would be, of course, the technology, but definitely to have a co-facilitator, and definitely to have, even if it's the same activity, to facilitate it differently. So for my experience, we planned that 2 persons in the room were connecting on a mirror board with the 2 persons remotes, so that they had the same thing in a smaller team, but they were working remotely, giving us the same results, but it was really dedicating to them. We prepared the board and everything during the rest of the people were working on walls with post-its. So it's because otherwise it's really not possible.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's what facilitators have been saying about hybrid, that you're basically planning 3 things. You're planning a live workshop, you're planning a remote workshop, and you're planning interactions between those 2 or 3 or 4 or more. So it's definitely hard. So hybrid is still happening. In-person is back, from the data, less, not surprisingly, really, less frequently than remote. So you have more, like maybe larger international events are in person again, but smaller, like team alignment, get togethers, meetings are still and will still probably just happen remotely. So there was interesting to see, looking at data, a difference between when we ask people for quantitative, like how many workshops are you running? It's like people are running online workshops, more or less the same number are working remotely, sometimes the same people. Some people have chosen to specialize. And then when we asked qualitatively, like, what was special about your year, people were like, we're back in person. Because it may have happened, maybe it happened only once or twice through that year, but it leaves a big impression.
Yeah.
And that says a lot about when should we choose or encourage our clients to choose one over the other. So if you're looking for really that memorable human connection, you need to be in person.
And team building, I really think you need to be in person.
But then if there are other things, maybe forms of training or ideas that you can do remotely. So that's kind of the conclusion I think this reached in the report about this, is they're now all happening. And it's about knowing when to choose what. When it's worth bringing everybody to the same place, and when it's okay to be remotely and have that. I kind of like the freedom to be in different places of the world and work together. Another finding that was interesting, and that touched about something you said earlier about how you started, something around that you started recognizing that getting teams, your team to work together wasn't as easy
as
you might have wanted it to.
Yeah.
is that we noticed in the data an increase of workshops or sessions in which the content is around team alignment, team cohesion, working with teams, which of course makes sense because we have this new world of work and more companies or managers are realizing that a facilitator can really help keeping your team working well together while they adapt to maybe some of them are in the office, some of them are at home, or maybe they're back in the office and they prefer to be at home, or maybe some of them are at home but want to be in the office. So all these new kind of organizations, that ways of working together that weren't there before and that facilitators can and are helping more and more with. So that was also an interesting thing that we found. And then I guess the third big thing is about training and certifications. And I think that's where you also chose to focus your expert commentary, isn't it?
Yeah, I mentor facilitators so that they can find what they want to do. And I think there are more and more facilitators who are giving of their experience by training other facilitators. So this is very nice. For example, Jan Keck, I think about Rachel Davies, or I think about Brittany Barrowing. So there are a lot of people giving courses. And about the certifications, there are people who think you need a certification to be a great facilitator. Others think you need to have a lot of practice, plus maybe some, of course, knowledge and eventually a certification, but you have to practice to become better and better. You have to make some mistakes to adjust. What do you think about that?
So I'll tell you what I think about it, but actually, no, I won't. What I'll do is I'll give you some data. I think because what I think about this is a very facilitatory thing to think, which is we need more conversations around this topic. And I am so glad that through the State of Facilitation Project, we as Session Lab, we get to host or encourage or challenge the facilitation community as a whole to have these conversations. Mm-hmm. For example, last year there was a finding that is repeated this year about demographics, about there being very few young facilitators, which many reasons for. And I know that various communities, including the IAF, have been trying to respond to that information by organizing events, by having conversations around it. And I think this year, besides AI, this conversation about certification might be one that I hope people will have. So the findings in the report are that 47% of facilitators are not certified in any way or form. No certification, no accreditation. Okay? That's a lot.
That's a lot. This is always the first question I ask to the people who are on the podcast. What is your background? And I cannot remember that someone told me I am certified. A lot of people coming from so different kind of background, but I am certified, for example, you are certified.
I have accreditation. So my understanding is also about a difference between certification and accreditation. People can, your listeners can correct me if this is wrong. So my understanding is accreditation is you know your stuff, and you present it to a panel or a test or whatever, and they accredit you. Yes, true. You know your stuff. Mm-hmm. And this is, in my understanding, what IAF does with the certified professional facilitator or the endorsed facilitator, which is the accreditation I have. Certification, as I understand it, is a proof that you took a course. Can also be a course with lots of practice hours. Then it gets complicated, as everything does in this facilitation world. But the fact is, most is not true. 47% is not most, but a super high number of facilitators are not certified in any way or accredited in any way. And then we asked a new question this year, parenthesis. If you gave us feedback last year, ideas about new questions, I read them all. I read all the feedback and I tried to put as many new questions in there and make as many changes as per requested. I couldn't do it all, or the survey would take an hour and a half to compile. But this was a new question that came from a request from readers. It was like, let's ask what was the most important thing in your background? How did you learn facilitation? We just didn't put it that way.
Yeah, that helped you to become a facilitator. Yeah.
And the answer is learning by doing.
Crazy.
So I will not quote numbers from that one because it's a complicated graph, because most people responded three or four things and they could. But almost always one of those three or four things was learning by doing and learning by practice, which to me means facilitation is a craft that you learn by apprenticeship, by participating in, by joining communities. And then it's the discussion, I think, is about then how can a client tell if you're any good? And currently that's word of mouth, which again, that's findings. We asked freelance facilitators a question around how did you find work? How did you find gigs this year? And the overwhelming majority was either word by mouth, referral by colleagues. Yeah. And I'm now speaking personally. Me, I'm a bit of two minds about this. I think it's beautiful that we're a community like that, that we know names and one another and we refer one another. And we've talked about how great that is. At the same time, it doesn't feel as professional as I think it could be. And I'm thinking of new people joining. How do they orient in this very informal world of relationship? And especially I'm thinking of clients.
Yeah.
How can they tell?
How can they know? Do you know if there is any platform, like a job platform extra for clients to find facilitators?
I have heard about people working on this. And I have also heard ourselves in Session Lab going, oh, we should do something like this.
Yeah, I was thinking about this yesterday because I'm working on the strategy of this year. And I was thinking, there is no platform. But okay, this is a big thing to do.
Yeah, if anybody does that and it works, you owe me and not a percentage.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much, Deborah. It was such a pleasure to talk to you and you gave so much insights.
And it's only a selection of all the stuff that's in the report. We ask a lot of questions, so we get a lot of answers. So, you know, sit down, download the report, read it online, send it to your friends. There's a lot in there. We try to make it interesting for new people, for experienced facilitators, for clients and companies as well. So if you're listening and you're considering, why should I hire a facilitator? There might be useful tips in there as well. So.
Thank you very much. I will, of course, put also the link to the state of facilitation in the show notes.
Cool.
I wish you a very end of the day.
Thank you. I will go and celebrate that I'm still alive after this interview.
It was easy, no?
It is easy to talk to you, actually. But before, I was like, oh, I'm so anxious. I have a sticker on my door that says, I'm on the radio, don't disturb.
Can I tell you something? I'm invited on a podcast on Friday as a guest. And this is another story when you are the guest. I am also nervous.
Oh, well, my experience as an experienced guest now, and my tip for you is don't worry. Podcast hosts are very nice. It's easy to have conversations with.
So thank you very much. And bye-bye, Deborah. And good continuation with all the work you do for the facilitators.
Thank you so much. And thank you, everybody, for listening.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow, that was a longer episode this time, but with so much information, I decided not to shorten it. In the show notes, you will find the links to Deborah's LinkedIn profile, the State of Facilitation Report 2024, and a link to the Session Lab platform with an extended trial just for you. Next week, join me, Apa, and Audrey for the spin-off episode Rendezvous with Les Workshoppers. In a fortnight's time, I'm delighted to welcome the founder of Consulting Kits, Baz Womerdam, who will be telling us how he taps into children's different way of thinking to help organizations solve problems through creativity. Until then, I wish you good health, success, and lots of happiness. Au revoir!